Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Let's go out to our good friend Jerry Dulac. My friend, welcome. Great to have you with us on this day.
Well, Steve, do cities have playoff baseball? Is that such a thing?
It is something that, as October progresses, there's a limited group of teams, Jerry, that are allowed to play.
Well, and I appreciate you telling me because, yeah, the baseball season here, I thought it all just ended in September, but I guess I'm wrong.
62 years ago today, Bill Mazeroski hit the homer in the bottom of the ninth inning to win the World Series.
Yeah, how about
that's a long time ago.
Maybe only second to the Immaculate Reception, the greatest sports moment in Pittsburgh history, and it might be number one because it was the World Series and it was Game 7 and it was a walk-off. So, you know, you probably should rank it number one. I don't know if it's been surpassed by the Immaculate Reception because that's considered the greatest play in NFL history. But either way, those are the two iconic moments. And, yeah, how about that? 62 years to the day.
And we are coming up on the 50th anniversary of that play that you talk about.
Yeah, in fact, the Heinz History Center today had a little ceremony. Kind of a quasi reenactment of the Immaculate Reception with Franco posing him and with the exact same ball from that game, posing him making that catch with that ball, somewhat ironically today.
Wow, I had a little fun out at Chartiers back in August. Jack and I were out there speaking to the Duquesne Club, and Franco was there.
Yeah,
and Franco's putting together something on the 50th anniversary of it. So Dana Harris was the one that was videoing it, and it was fun. Me just sit off to the side for 20-25 minutes and listen to Franco and Jack go back and forth about the day and the play. So that was a lot of fun. So I enjoyed
it. That short tears connection had nothing to do with Ronnie Moeller, did it?
Oh, are you kidding me? Oh, no. There are certain absolutes in life, Jerry. You and I know that. I mean, over there, even when he's not the president, he's still the king.
He is the man at short tears. You got that right.
No doubt. All right. For the Steelers, obviously, we all know what's going on. So what did you think about just the pure move of saying Kenny Pickett going forward? What did you think about that?
Well, you know, Steve, it surprised me that it happened when it happened. You don't see NFL coaches put a rookie quarterback in a game that was never played at halftime in a non-injury situation. You usually weather the storm, bite the bullet, wait till the end of the game, and then start a new week with a full week of practice with your rookie quarterback. And he didn't do that, and I will tell you he didn't intend to do that. He didn't expect to do that. Something went on in that locker room at halftime that caused him to change his mind. After talking to a number of people, I'm not buying that we needed a spark to or reasoning to make that change, even though they did, and even though Kenny Pickett provided it. He flipped the scoreboard from 10-6 to 20-10. But that was also my point, is that it's a 10-6 game, and they are a big toe away from Deontay Johnson catching the ball in the back of the end zone from Trubisky of it being 10-10 at halftime. There was no need to panic at that point. So, yeah, it sounds nice that they needed a spark, which they did, but they knew what they were dealing with, and they knew what their plan was, and it did not involve making that change then. But it happened, and you know, Kenny Pickett showed well, but he did throw three interceptions, and he did throw the one that killed him. You know, a pass that you just can't make. Coincidentally, to, you know, our fellow Penn Stater, Pat Freiermuth. And, he looked good the other day. I mean, he looked like he was in command of the offense. He's very good at the RPO one read quick throw. He's very accurate. He releases the ball quickly. They went up and down the field. Steve, they only had three and outs. Now, like for Kansas City, that's cause for an investigation. But for the Steelers, right, only three and outs in the game and that offense, yeah, that's not too bad. But yet, the bottom line is only 3 points. Now, and that, you know, they missed two field goals, but they shouldn't have even attempted it. Went 24-3 and 31-3. What's that doing for you? You know, kicking field goals against that team who's going up and down the field on you. What's a field goal? You needed to go for it on fourth down, and both decisions, in my, you know, in my estimation, were poor. And but again, I thought he looked well, he played well, but the offense continues to not produce points.
And it's more than that. I always feel like a rookie quarterback, even though they can be terrific, they need help around him.
Absolutely.
And Jerry, on both sides of the ball, it doesn't look like he's got enough help around him. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say that's more than fair. You know, so now the question is, Mike Tomlin says after the game, well, no stone will be unturned. You know, we have to consider changes, not for the sake of change, but to make ourselves better. You know, he backed off that comment a little bit on Tuesday, saying that we're not going to make a change just to make a change for the sake of change. But the reality is, Steve, you know, who are they going to change to? And you saw in that Buffalo game, they were already without three defensive starters. They lost four more during the game, and then, of course, they lost Pat Freiermuth with concussion. But so they're now without eight players, seven on defense, and guys who had to step in, who you might consider making changes to. What did they do in that game? Very little. Point being, right, it's not like you have great options. And so that's just where they are. They're a team that can't afford injuries. And even if they do, I don't know how good they are. Do I think they're a 1-4 team? No, I do not. But, you know, this isn't like – it isn't like, you know, Ben Roethlisberger is your quarterback, or, you know, Hines Ward is your receiver, or Marquise Pouncey is your center, you know, or you have Troy Polamalu back there, and you think, okay, 1-4, they've had some injuries. You know, they're a little stale, they're a little stagnant right now, but you see what they have and you think – they can turn this around. You know, to quote my old friend Dick LeBeau, he used to always say, I've seen sicker dogs than this get well in a hurry. Well, I'm not so sure that there's enough bite in this dog to get well enough. But we shall see. And I think the other thing, too, Steve, for all the people who just don't get it and understand, that you cannot quantify how much they miss Ben Roethlisberger in those situations. And it was said to me by two people coming out of that locker room, figuratively, after the game, Sunday and Monday, saying to me that they don't, you know, they miss seven because he could help cover up for their deficiencies. And the games they won last year, seven of the nine victories, he brought them back in the fourth quarter because that's when he said, you know what, this game plan ain't working. I'm going to do what I need to do.
Right.
Now,
exactly.
they just don't have... They're not in a position to do that, and they don't have the type of people right now who can do that. I mean, you're talking about a future Hall of Famer. So I don't think people fully understand, you know, the impact that he did and can have, and they just don't have it. And now, is that the only reason? No, but believe me, it's a big part of it.
Well, and they not only don't have seven, they also don't have Watt. So between the two of them, they don't have anybody that can turn it around. And right now, to me, Jerry, they're a fourth-place team playing a second-place schedule.
Yeah, well, and Steve, that's a good way of putting it. And you look at this stretch right now, and that goes back to the Kenny Pickett question. Why would you put him in you know, where his first game is Buffalo, and then it's going to be Tampa Bay, and then you're going on the road to Miami and Philadelphia? At the time he made that decision, those four teams were a combined 10-2. Not exactly the cupcake portion of the schedule. And and that's why I say I think that decision was made hastily, emotionally, a knee-jerk reaction, which is uncommon for Mike Tomlin. But once you make that decision, Steve, there's no turning back. You can't then say, well, we're going to go back then to Mitch Trubisky, because that wouldn't sit well with a fan base, first of all. Not that he wants to listen to that, because he says he doesn't, and I believe him. But nonetheless, you have to be aware of that, though, too, and not just the fan base, how it might sit with maybe some other people, you know, internally. Right. So he's in a tough spot, but he created that spot.
Right. See, that's what surprised me, because I thought if they were going to do it, it would have been November 13th with the Saints game.
Absolutely.
After the bye week.
That's right. See where you are, you know, see how you're performing, and then you've gotten time to get him ready. And, you know, then you say, well, we don't have much choice here. We need to do something. And you make the change. And But this is where they are right now. And, you know, their problems aren't Kenny Pickett. But at this point in time, it's not like he's going to save them, because it's a very difficult position for him to be in.
No question. Have you been surprised at all by the lack of production from Harris at running back?
Yes, and just from what his pedigree is. And when I say no, it's only because I see, and I've seen it from the beginning, I see a guy who's reticent when he's going into the hole, when he sees the correct hole, who pauses, who takes away the advantage he has, Steve, which is his size, speed, and strength.
Yep.
So instead of seeing the hole and just hitting it like someone stole his lunch money, he went by pausing, hesitating. He's given the defense and defenders a chance to converge on him quicker. And also, I think what's happening is Najee was just trying to hit the home run too many times instead of taking that 4, 5, and 6 yard gain. And after those 4, 5, and 6 yard gain, boom, then you hit the 20 yarder. Then you go two yards, 3 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards, boom, another one, 15, 18 yards. And it looked like he was just trying to make too much happen from the get-go, missing holes and just not hitting them when they were there, the way he needs to hit them. And you're going to see Jaylen Warren, number 30, play more this week for that reason. You know, he's averaging 4.9 yards a pop because he sees that hole and he just hits it. You know, now, Najee's only been around 2 years. It's not like he's a 5-year veteran whose body has taken a toll, and you get to the point you go, you know what, I'm just getting tired of getting pounded like that.
Right.
And I also understand, too, Steve, that, you know, opposing defensive coordinators aren't sitting there worrying about Jaylen Warren when he gets in the game. They're not game planning for him, but they're game planning for Najee Harris. So I understand him touching the ball gets the defense's attention a little bit different than when Jaylen Warren, an undrafted rookie, gets the ball. Nonetheless, he's been productive when he's been in there, and you're going to see him more on Sunday.
You do bring up, last question I'm going to bring up because I don't want to eat up too much of your time, but we've seen a lot of coaches use analytics to go forward on fourth down, two-point conversions. And over a period of time, you and I both know, you brought up Dick LeBeau. If Dick LeBeau's running the defense, what's he doing during the course of the week? He's dialing up every fourth down play the opposition has, and they're practicing them during the course of the week. Same thing with two-point conversions, right? I think we're seeing all these defensive coordinators now. They're doing a lot of work on fourth down plays of the opposition and two-point plays, and I think we've seen a swing the other way, and they're not converting them anymore.
Yeah, Dick LeBeau not only wouldn't give a hoot about analytics, he never even used a call sheet. You know, it was all in his head. He just knew everything inside and out, and that's what made him just not only successful, but just a beauty to be around. And, yeah, and, you know, John Harbaugh, of course, lives by those analytics, and even he last week, after failing the week before, you know, going on, costing it when he went on fourth down and got stopped down by the goal line. This time he kicked the field goal. So, you know, I've talked to Bill Cowher about this a couple times. And, you know, it's like these coaches get too caught up in the analytics. And, you know, coaches, good coaches, have a feel for the game, the flow of the game, the temperature of the game, and their players. And when to do this and when to do that, and what's being told to you with the analytics doesn't take that into account. And yet so many coaches, they don't pay attention. They don't care about that. They're married to the analytics, and they go by them. And I just think they have to be more flexible. But then, you know what, Steve? It's because we've been around the game a long time, and we've seen the coaches who were successful and made it work. And all of a sudden now everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel and tell you what you need to do to be successful. And we've seen it work the other way, so much a large majority of the time.
Beautifully put. Because, again, I've always been, the most successful people are always the ones that have a feel for their profession. You know, not just the game, but their profession. And I'm sensing that we're seeing more coaches in the NFL that are play callers and not, like, head coaches.
I agree with you. And I think that's because lately they've, you know, it's become, you know, they're looking at the numbers, they're looking at the odds, the percentages, the analytics, and they study that. And I'll give you a small example. Somewhat to that, but a little bit different in terms of getting the feel for the game. I was talking to Charlie Batch, the former backup quarterback. He was in that same quarterback room with Byron Leftwich, who's now the Tampa Bay offensive coordinator, who'll be here Sunday, along with Ben. And he was talking about, he says, one of the things that was so good about Byron Leftwich, he said he was a visual guy. He got the play from the sideline, and he wanted to see, he could see it, and he communicated it to the players. He didn't look at a wrist card, you know, looking at the plays where his young quarterbacks go in the huddle, and they're not looking at their teammates. They're looking at that wrist card. So there's no eye-to-eye communication. There's no, hey, look, I'm coming to you, man, get ready. There's none of that. These guys look at this wrist card with the play call, and they take the feel of the play out of the game and actually out of the huddle. And so there's less personal interaction and more, and it's a communication, but it's different. It's they might as well just hand out a little sheet of paper to everybody, and this is what it's going to be. And so I think it's the same type of thing. It's that feel you get in the huddle. It's that feel you get on the sideline. And risk cards and these analytics and everything, just it takes away from that a great deal.
Boy, that part, I never thought about that part. Wow.
I didn't either until Charlie told me. He said that was one of the things about Byron Leftwich. He said that was really good about him was his communication, was his eye-to-eye with the players in the huddle. And he tries, obviously, sure he tries to coach the same way. But I was with you, Steve. I never thought about it until Charlie was telling me.
Wow, that is something. Hey,
ask Jammer about it and see what he thinks.
That's something. Believe me, we've got dinner coming up tomorrow, and if I'm going to see him in about an hour, I just may bring it up when I see him in about an hour.
Well, so. I want to tell you real quickly. So I go up to Freiermuth in the locker room yesterday. And I said, what do you think this weekend? And, of course, he's in concussion protocol. He goes, I don't know. I go, no, I don't mean about you playing. I mean about the game at Michigan. He goes, oh, we'll beat him. He goes, oh, we'll beat him. I go, yeah. He goes, oh, yeah. I says, I hope you're right.
We're going to find out starting at noon. Love his attitude. Wouldn't mind having him here.
Hey, he's a big fan. He's a big fan of Strange. He thinks he's a big-time player, big-time tight end.
You want to know why? You know what, Greg McElroy asked me about this morning, and he said, what's been the biggest difference in the offense? I said, it's Strange.
Yeah,
it's
no
not
kidding.
Strange's ability to catch it. It's Strange's ability to become a better blocker for that running game.
Yeah, no kidding.
Huh. Yeah.
And yeah, those young players are very impressive, and that quarterback can spin it, and that number 11 is going to be a stud. And
no doubt.
Yeah, those two young running backs are pretty good.
Yeah. Hey, my friend, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Great stuff as always.
Always good chatting with you, Steve, as you know, anytime, man.